This week, join us as we look at a parody pastiche of the prior 50 years of giant monster movies from the US to Japan, full of scream queens, leading monster men, guffaws and gaffes, and more Zucker Brothers comedy styling than you can shake a slapstick at. Lose your sanity along with us this week, because this is Kaiju vs. History, The Naked Monster.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your retired actor agreeing to a bit part for drinking money, Patrick. And joining me is several pairs of gratuitous breasts, also known as Miles. Hey, Miles.
Is that all I am to you? just a piece of meat.
So gratuitous. I feel like that's what the director, what it was to the director. Yes. We are talking about The Naked Monster, and what a come down from last week's Godzilla Final Wars going to this movie.
Yeah, it's like you just gave me the best steak I've ever had in my life, and then you just shoveled some roadkill off the road. It gave me some like the worst backstrap I've ever had before.
Yeah, I mean, roadkill's not too far off. It feels like this movie has been run over at least once. This is a 2005 comedy, kaiju comedy movie, I guess would be.
Yeah, let's put air quotes around comedy.
Since we can get to that, you know.
It was released in 2005. This movie looks like it was made in like 1977 with a cheap budget then.
No, this, some of the footage of this film comes from the 80s. They did some reshoots in the 90s, which we'll talk about, and then it took like 5 or 6 years ostensibly to edit it or perhaps get the funds together for some final shots, and it came out.
Yeah, exactly. We have a monster whose legs are basically baggy pants.
Yeah, a kaiju movie that came together on several shoestring budgets and finally released to, I think, just DVD in a special kind of release format in 2005. So here in the U.S., even though I think they had been done filming for some time, directed by Kenneth Tobey. Starring Kenneth Tobey as one of the main actors, and Brink Stevens. Director is Ted Newsome, who's also the writer and producer. He's like the main creator for this film. And yeah, not a lot written about the production of this movie. There are some, if you look hard enough online, some behind the scenes and some stories about it, but not much for the title either.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of came to the same conclusion I did, where it was like, and weirdly enough, I had like just rewatched the Naked Gun trilogy.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what they were going for, what calling it The Naked Monster. Cause I mean,
the film that they were originally making in the 80s had the working title of Attack of the Bee Movie Monster, which is a pretty perfect title as well for what this film is. And yeah, I mean, the Naked Gun movies by 2005 were pretty well out of the zeitgeist, you know? So the Naked Monster kind of feels like, you know, because they are aping the Zucker Brothers and Abram film style. It's also maybe a reference to the fact that the director continuously just adds scenes of naked women into the film for no reason. Like maybe they want you to think like, there's naked things within this film. Even though I don't think like any of the posters or kind of box art really is very gratuitous in that way. There's one piece of art for the Naked Monster that has the monster holding a woman in its hands, which I don't think happens in the movie. And then seems to be stomping through London, perhaps. I'm not sure where this art comes from.
I don't know.
I don't think this is perhaps a real poster. There's a few cover slash posters for the DVD releases. And maybe they also, I found some evidence that they put out a Blu-ray, which is bonkers to me at one point for this film.
I'm not gonna lie. This is one. I mean, yes, this is a movie that it is one we probably should have covered. I could also see the argument to not cover it because it doesn't really follow any of our kaiju rules.
What do you mean? It's got a kaiju in it. It very got much
a giant monster, but like it's not named. Kaiju. It's not like special. It's just I don't know. I
Miles, I don't know what you mean.
I struggled deeply with this movie. I'm transported back to when I first rolled credits on Queen Kong. I don't think I have disliked an experience since that movie. Certainly, I mean, I watch plenty of stinker horror movies throughout the year, and this is just. It's rough to watch. Like, I think that's the problem. It's not just that it's cheap, because like that's the easiest thing to criticize this movie is that, oh, it's a no budget, you know, quote unquote parody movie. It's that I've seen movies that look they were home movies, and this looks like it was shot like on home video. Like, this does not look like it was shot with an actual film camera.
I mean, it was in a way it was shot on Super 8, at least the 80s footage. I'm not sure if the 90s reshoots were the same camera. I think they might have used kind of a higher grade VHS camera for those, and then did some kind of After Effects to try to make it look similar for the film. There's some notes on the Wikipedia entry kind of about the production history, which are actually quite interesting. Did you watch the behind the scenes video that I sent you?
I did not. The video documentary. As soon as I was finished with this movie, I was done. I don't care where it came from, to be perfectly honest.
This is on Interweb Kaiju's YouTube page. If you type in the Naked Monster video documentary, it should come up and has some behind the scenes, and indeed has some footage of them refilming the 90s bits, because the original film that they had actually used a stop motion monster. Which is take a look at it now. I linked it in there. It's a 4 minute video, but it's at like the minute 30 mark. And it looks very rough for stop motion, but it is an interesting looking monster. It's very different from obviously the suit that we got, kind of gargoyle esque without the wings. But that is what they had when they were going into production of Attack of the B-Movie Monster. I want to say maybe some more of the humor was added in the 90s recordings. Mm-hmm. And that's when they decided to change the special effects, and the suit was added for a new kaiju. Miles, I can't believe you didn't do your research. The monster has a name in the movie. It's Monstersaurus. What a classic name.
You can't, I can't translate blank stares over audio, but I just gave Patrick the most unamused look.
Monstersaurus. And yeah, I think it does have a power to look like it has a blue screen outline. I think they talk about it one part of the movie that may or may not be radiation. There are bits of the very cheap, ultra low budget aspects of the movie that they kind of incorporate into the film. As far as the kaiju design, the three eyes are interesting. It is not a great suit, but a lot of things that are bad about the movie, it's like, well, I think they purposefully tried to make it look bad because they're trying to make it look like a 1950s film. It's a shame because some of the stop motion I think would have worked pretty well, and
the stop motion is much more interesting. And honestly, the stop motion monster looks a lot better than what we got.
Yeah, well, the stop motion, that is, you know, I would say more so what the 1950s American monster movies that this movie is kind of parodying used more. And I think at the time, Godzilla 1998 had just come out. So they're like, oh, well, people are thinking more about Godzilla as a monster in these monster movies. So even though there's not a suit in the 3D animated CGI TriStar Godzilla, they decided to go with this kind of cheesy suit. And Miles, canonically, Monstersaurus is like the only kaiju that has beaten King or Godzilla like crazily in a fight. It might have been a toy of Godzilla, but
yeah, the fight sequence we're given is this, a toy gets thrown. It's
terrible. In this universe, Godzilla and all the monster movies, you know, from the 1950s, like actually happened. And so the characters from those movies, like, all kind of exist. And that's where we get all these many, many cameos from 1950s stars, like Kenneth Toby, who plays Colonel Hendry, his same character from The Thing from Another World. Mm-hmm. In the film, we've got cameos from John Agar from Revenge of the Creature, Paul Marco, who plays Kelton the Cop from Plan 9 from Outer Space, and some other of films. I think he's in like a trilogy of Ed Wood films. He also plays Kelton the Cop in this movie. And yeah, there's a ton of other kind of cameos. A number of both Anne Robinson and Les Tremaine from The War of the Worlds are in this film playing their characters, I guess technically legally distinct versions of their characters, because this is a parody. It falls under parody. But
oh boy.
Talking about some of the other cast, Miles, I was figured you'd be excited about this, because this movie also, for some reason, has some well-known scream queens from the 1980s. I think they're, these are just actresses perhaps that Kenneth Toby like knew personally.
Most likely. I mean, yeah. I think the only reason I knew this movie existed is because there is a very small appearance of Linnea Quigley, and then Brink Stevens is, I think she plays the doctor.
She's our main actress, and she's actually pretty good in this movie. She came back like a decade, like 10 or 15 years later, to film more scenes later on. So there's like parts where, you know, she ages very quickly in the movie.
Yes, it's very strange.
Her shower scene, though, is from the 80s. So this is like when she was kind of at the top of her scream queen.
Yeah, this would have been around the time she did like the Slumber Party and the Slime Ball Bull-rama, yeah. Or Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah, it was probably between those two
titles, like, of real movies she was in.
They just made a sequel to Sorority Babes and the Slime Bowl.
I know. They shouldn't have. But yes. Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of how I knew this movie even existed. It's not, because I think Brink Stevens was married to the guy that created The Rocketeer.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Dave Stevens. Yeah, I remember her name, seeing her name more than even Quigley, just because of the association, because being in comics and stuff, and Dave Stevens' very strange life.
They were married for 1 year, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it's still part of that whole story.
Yeah,
because I think she was like the model of one of the characters for a while.
She was like a pinup kind of model,
for him.
That's interesting.
But yeah, so I mean, yeah, this does have some, you know, I don't want to say legitimacy, but yes, you get all these older actors. Yeah. And yes, you have a handful of scream queens. You have Brink Stevens, who, you know, yeah, she is the only one that seems to have showed up for work.
Yes.
Her Linnea character quickly just has this weird random like 2 minute scene, like and like she gets like pretty high credit. I mean, this, which is not unusual, that happens anytime you have a name. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she has that one sequence and you never see her again. You see her topless, as you usually do, and yeah, no disrespect, that's what they brought her in for. But
it's very interestingly, she plays a deaf character in the movie who gets destroyed by Monstersaurus, and it's like, wow, that's so interesting. Like, why they wrote her character not to have any lines? You know, she's signing the entire thing. But I don't know. Maybe it was extra to get to hear her voice. But it is a very short scene that I'm pretty sure was part of the 80s filming. I don't think that's 90s Linnea Quigley, but
most likely.
Yeah, so it's hard to differentiate.
On paper, sounds like a good idea.
Oh, yeah. So if you had described this to me, like a parody film that brings together dozens of different giant monster movie tropes and then is an homage to like an entire the entirety of like the 1950s genre, even if it was just the American films, I would have said like, that's great. This director, he's not handling it the concept with the care and the time I think is needed to put this together, even though this movie took like 20 years to
fruition. It's what always captures people's imaginations is like these projects that like were almost lost films and then they're cobbled together and released. Like a couple years ago, Grizzly 2 was put together, which I think had like George Clooney in one of his first roles, either that or he's in the first one, I can't remember, which had like gone on from like, yeah, this had Charlie Sheen and Laura Dern and George Clooney, but this movie had started in like 1983 and then got finished in 2020. So it's one of those things that like captures people's imaginations and then you're like, wait, this is the sequel to an already not great movie, and you know, it's a mess. And so when a project like this happens, especially this kind of like This movie also, I can't remember if you mentioned this because you said it started off on Super 8 to be put to VHS, but it also started off as a bet. This has the exact same origin that Manos, the Hands of Fate has, where there was a dare to make a movie for $1,500, which is how you got Manos. And this one was almost the same thing. It was a dare to make a movie with less than $2,500. And so,
which is actually kind of impressive if that version, the 1985 Attack of the B-Movie Monster, included a full amount of stop motion animation. Would have liked to have seen that version.
I'm not convinced
that I think it was a short. It was more like a 25 minute kind of, you know, gag movie.
I'm also not convinced that like that was the budget. I think he was dared to do that. I think he went over $2,500.
Probably, yeah. Probably
just for that cast alone.
Well, yeah, so that's the thing. They had a lot of cameos and a lot of cast, including the aforementioned Kenneth Toby. He, I think, was able to come back, but some of the cameo actors had already passed away by like the late 90s, so could not have like continued to cameo in the film. Kenneth Toby passed away before this movie came out, so this is a posthumous release for him. He died in 2002. I looked around for the original version. I was not able to find it online, but like I said, in that behind the scenes documentary, including there's a cameo by kaiju historian Stuart Galbraith IV, who if you've heard of his name, he's written a few books on Japanese kaiju films, Godzilla especially, but the main one that I use for some research is Japanese cinema. He was also given thanks by Rifle and Godzewitsky in the Ishiro Honda biography. So he's, you know, a researcher, and I think he's the one that filmed the video, but he took a turn in the Monstersaurus costume, and apparently he's friends with Ted Newsom. So, but yeah, like I said, in the 1950s, they came back to shoot more of this film. Actors Robert Shane, John Harmon had already passed away, and I think they had limited time with some of the other older actors, so maybe some of their roles got reduced a little bit. The movie starts, and you're pretty sure that there's going to be a lot of Ken the Toby, like how they're building him up, but I don't know. It really did turn into the Brink Stevens show, but like I said, I she did show up for work, and
yeah, she,
as silly as this movie is, she seemed to try the hardest to nail the comedy aspects.
She's, you know, the only, she felt like the only professional actor on set, despite the fact that other people had worked in the business at some point in time, although most of these people had been, you know, either so far out of work or long from working or retired that they're kind of sleeping through these roles.
Yes.
Freaking Heckle and Jekyll, the sheriff and the monster agent, are
R.G. Wilson plays Sheriff Lance Boiler, which is a gross name, but a fun character. And then, yeah, Agent Jeff T. Stewart is the other cast member. He passed away in 1994, so he was also not able to come back for some reason.
They practically ruined the movie. It's not just them. The script is, horrendously unfunny for the most part and very bad. But two guys are just incompetent in their performances.
Yeah. They don't add. They don't add a whole lot. Yeah, it really does feel like this film, besides the bet aspect of the original film, it feels like our director / writer / producer, Ted Newsom, is just nonstop trying to cash in IOUs. And in the documentary behind the scenes footage, he talks about how he used friends and coworkers to be like crew for the film and get things made. And yeah, so it was filmed and edited, I think, over a 21 year period, maybe longer, depending on when they started. They talk about how they illegally filmed almost the entirety of the movie. They did not have permits. They did not have insurance. This was obviously a very guerrilla film style.
But again, you tell me these things and everything about this movie sounds awesome. I feel like I'm watching the movie that is being made in Ed Wood, Tim Burton's Ed Wood.
But it doesn't feel like an independent. It doesn't have that spirit of a film.
It feels soulless.
It has the exploitative je ne sais quoi of, like you said, a 70s, kind of ripoff movie. But yeah, I felt dirty watching this the entire time. Like, well, first of all, I watched it on someone's rip upload on YouTube, which is definitely the best way to watch this movie, because I don't know if you necessarily want to support
it. It's also how I watched the movie
in the DVD. But it's so weird to see all these scream queens in the nude on YouTube. I was like, should I be reporting this? Like,
the YouTube has plenty of R-rated films on there. It is what it is.
Well, I'm just surprised. But yeah, I felt greasy watching this movie. And like I said, just from the description on paper, I feel like this could have been, even with an ultra low budget, a very fun film. But oh boy, it's all over the place.
It's incompetently executed. The script is awful. The suit is bad. The creature design is conceptually interesting, I guess, but I think what sucks is, like, and it's kind of why I don't like the scary movie franchise, mm-hmm. is it's the lowest common denominator kind of humor. And it's, there's also a weird, like, there's no love. And I see the term labor of love thrown around with this when I was reading up on this movie about all these references and stuff. I'm like, yeah, but it comes from a place, it's almost like Spaceballs, where it's like, it still comes from a place where everything's kind of backhanded towards these movies. And it really rubbed me the wrong way. And that's what felt kind of gross for me this isn't like, oh gosh, what was that movie? The Lost Skeleton called Cadavra that came out in 2005, around the same time, mm-hmm. where it was a zing on the 2000 or the 1950s sci-fi movies.
Right. That's the other thing. Right? Yeah. This one feels like it's also doing that, but also kaiju and also, in a way, riffing on 80s, cult movies and things like that. It's very all over the place, where I feel like they really could have stuck with just one concept and gone with it. But yeah, I understand that this is something, and we're going to see it again, because both Japan and America does kind of parody kaiju rips as we go on into the 2000s. And this one is definitely the most inelegantly executed probably of all of them, but I don't think it's worse than Queen Kong. Oh man, Queen Kong.
It's tough for me. Really tough. I mean, both Queen movies Kong is I hated the viewing experience. And I'm looking through my notes of things that I took note of. I know at one point Brick Stevens makes a Joe Bob Briggs reference, which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
There is a sequence where, so an old man, we haven't even told you the plot because there's no plot.
It's just
a monster is loose and a team comes together to stop it.
Yeah, including classic monster hunters from other movies. And, you know, there's a lot of references to all these giant monsters who attacked in the 50s and 60s. And there hasn't been a lot of giant monster attacks really since the 70s. And that's kind of like a reference to how kaiju movies have gone off a little bit. But yeah, that, I mean, that's the basic monster. Monster source is just attacking. They down it at one point, but it's not dead, so it comes back, obviously.
Yeah. There's a sequence where an old man gets eaten and his wife is looking for him, and she kind of like rings the dinner bell, honey, breakfast, and then honey, breakfast, and then screams cream of wheat. And I'm like, okay, that's actually funny, just because it's like, what point in your life is like cream of wheat like the siren call of breakfast? Like, it's the most, I mean, I like cream of wheat fine, but like that's not going to get me like a running to the house.
There's a bit where the monster source is like, yeah, like picking people up and like eating them or killing them, and one of the victims screams out, "You're tearing me apart!" And some people think that that's a reference to 2003's The Room, which I don't, I mean, this movie came out only 2 years after. I was like, I don't think so.
I don't think it is. I don't even know. Had The Room really screened much by that point?
I feel like it. I mean, you know, this is people living in Hollywood making this, but I don't think they would go back and like record a line
joke. Even the line in the movie is a generic line in The Room. So
yeah. There's a couple of written out bits that do make me chuckle in this movie, but the only bit of dialogue that I think is it quoted on IMDb that you can find and read through is when she goes and meets the foreman, and she's like, "You're the foreman, Mr. Gorman." He's like, "Call me Norman." And then they go through like a whole
it's something you would see in a Zucker style comedy, but like way better and way more competently delivered.
Yes, yeah, but there is some good writing towards that comedy style, but because the movie is so choppy, it's, you know, two movies kind of chopped together, I don't feel like the pace or like I'm never ready for another laugh. Like I struggle to call it a comedy. Like, there's obviously comedic bits in it, but
it is certainly an attempt at a comedy.
Yeah it is. I like we said in the intro, slapstick is probably one of the best descriptions, because it is thrown together, is very slapstick and in several definitions of the word. I tried to find out a little bit more about the production of this movie. There is a post, or there's a credit song by Rocky Burnett called "You Turn My Life Into a Monster Movie." He was a one-hit wonder from the 80s who did "Tired of Toeing the Line," which I do not remember ever being on.
I looked into that too, and I was like, I don't know this
at but all. I cannot find any hide nor hair. I actually like the song. It's like, you know, just like a constant, like every line is like a reference to like a B monster movie, but there's like lines about Godzilla and Rodan and Ghidorah and stuff. So like, as far as kaiju songs go, there are so few and far between, but I can't find the song by itself online anywhere, let alone the lyrics. So ostensibly the only place to listen to the song is this movie. So if you want to listen to it, go fast forward to the credits, I guess. It's not great. It's not a great song, but it oddly fits the kind of slapdash, you know, aspect of the film pretty well. Miles, this is a bad movie. Let's talk about how bad it is. What's your personal enjoyment for the naked monster?
Non-existent. I had a terrible time watching this movie. I mean, you've heard how enthusiastic I am about this. I mean, because I understand that, you know, genre comedy, when it's good, it's some of the best stuff. When you think of a horror or sci-fi comedy that really nails it, I mean, there's nothing better. But the other side of that, the double-edged sort of that, is that it's so hard to do and do well that when someone really fails, it's so much more, it's so much more worse than just a comedy being bad. It's compoundly worse because you're doing two things bad. And unfortunately, yeah, every choice this movie makes is bad. Like it's a perfect storm of a bad movie. Now, this is certainly one that if you had friends and drinks, that you can have a good time with it. However,
I don't even know.
There are so many better movies to do that with. This is actively a bad time. I don't think it cares for its source material. It's a waste of great Scream Queens and a waste of some of the, you know, talent of yesteryear who are just basically doing it as a favor. I had an absolutely terrible time with this. So 1 out of 10.
Okay. So yeah, that's on a scale a failure. I'm giving it a 3 out of 10, which for personal enjoyment, we describe as regrettable. I definitely had a regrettable experience both putting this on the list and watching it for the first time. Like I said, on paper, seems like it's going to be good. Scene shot 20 years prior and the stock music, it forms an odd pastiche. It feels more like a clip show than anything. It is.
Yes, exactly.
It is not really watchable as a film experience. I got 10 minutes in the movie and I really thought an hour had passed because, you know, at first it starts with like a lot of stock footage. And
I started this movie like 10 times and was like researching whether or not I was watching the right film.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And I think I even asked you, I was like, hey, does it begin this way? Because I was like, I thought I was watching one of those goof videos on YouTube or something that like someone had done something. Oh, and I was just like,
goof videos. Yeah. 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 So time will slow down. It is a magic time machine. If you watch this movie, it did have some elements that, you know, while you experience them, they are very bad, but it's still somehow funny in parts, in both good, bad and bad, bad in parts. It also had Leanna Quigley's breasts. So getting an entire point upgrade for that alone to a 3 out of 10.
Boy.
The technical aspect, I'm also giving it a 3 out of 10, which once again on our scale is notably flawed, which I think is true. I've written here my notes. This movie has the subtlety and deftness of a lead pipe. It does feel like if you took the Naked Gun film and just kind of shred the script and tried to put it together from like all the shredded pieces, like you would get some bits. It's like, oh yeah, that is a Naked Gun bit or Airplane or, you know, whichever Zucker Brothers film you want to choose from. But yeah, the script, the acting, the directing in most of the movie is just so bad. Sometimes it's in a charming way, but most of the time it is in a unwatchable kind of way. The editing also feels like parts of the movie are chopped incorrectly to where like one scene goes into another and we're like missing a scene in the middle. So yeah. There's that too. Watching it is just also frustrating in that respect. So at multiple parts of the movie, like you, I was confused about where we were, and I did have to stop and restart it a few times. So Miles, what about you for the technical aspect?
So, I first of all, Patrick, if you want to see Linnea Quigley naked, there's like 20 movies I can recommend to you that are
we'll talk about
more watchable
off the pod when the podcast ends. Yeah, get you like your
her entire 80s oeuvre. There's actually a great documentary. I don't know if Brink Stevens is in it. I think it's called "Screaming in High Heels." I think I've mentioned it before.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's a really, really good documentary on the 80s Scream Queens, and it focuses on three specific ones, but I think Brinkstein is in there. But speaking of her, she is the whole reason why I'm giving this an extra point for a 2 out of 10, because I think if you would put her in a better written and directed movie, she would have shined. She is a legitimately solid talent.
This
movie makes look bad because the material's awful, but she is really good in this.
Her character is both funny and is like feels like a smart scientist as well, which is like obviously none of the writers have any like technical know-how. So like she pulled something out of the script. I feel like that wasn't there.
And that's the problem is had she been given like a Naked Gun quality script, she could have pulled off this comedy very well. Like she has the chops for it. Unfortunately, this movie fails her in every capacity. Her co-stars are terrible. And sometimes I think terrible on purpose, which I don't care for either.
Yeah.
And I mean, the script's bad. The suit is terrible. And again, it almost feels like it's on purpose. And again, that there's that backhanded like nature to the giant monster movies that I just don't care for. And I know people who listen to the show do enjoy those movies from the 50s. You might get a kick out of this because I have been on record as to not having enjoyed the ones that we watched as much. Not that I dislike 50s American sci-fi, but they're giant monster ones, not as much. But I would hesitate to recommend this to anyone except people I don't like.
Yeah, have you heard of The Naked Monster? My own enemy.
Yeah, I would love to waste 68 minutes of your time.
Yeah, it's also really short. But what about where it stands as its importance as a kaiju film? You know, this isn't the first kaiju parody that we've gotten, but it is probably the one that tries to reach the most, you know, different bits of the genre. What would you say you'd score it there?
Well, I'm going back to a one, offensive. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I'm still giving it a three here, but walk me through your win.
Well, I mean, first of all, for its evocative nature, I don't think this comes from a place of love, and that's a big one for me. It knows some of the tropes of American science fiction and a little bit of the Godzilla stuff, but it doesn't do anything with it. It doesn't do anything of merit. It doesn't add to the canon. It certainly isn't culturally relevant. This movie has been all but forgotten. In fact, I was kind of surprised it ended up in the list, to be perfectly honest. And but I mean, this is why we're going through every single one. It's like we, you know, warts and all. And but yeah, this movie to me, this I think fails in every conceivable wart. Way as a kaiju film. And I mean, I couldn't give it anything other than a one or a two. But I am I'm sticking with a one because I think this movie is almost made in bad faith. And that to me is worse than completely failing.
Yeah, I can understand, like I said, where you're coming from with that aspect of your review. I think some of the things that can be described as like bad in the movie do feel like they're purposefully and a little maliciously poking fun at how bad the movies in the 1950s were. As well, but like they were bad, like you said, with heart. Like they were trying to make a good movie and just right. Very badly stumbled along the way. Not that that has anything to do with their importance, but the idea is just so good to make an homage film to the terrible sci-fi of the 1950s. I'm surprised that this hasn't been attempted more. But yeah, this movie is less a love letter to those movies and more of a kidnapper's ransom note, you know, of lettering cut out of newspapers. I do wish this movie and I wish there was a solid kaiju spoof movie and they had used those actors well, but it's the same thing of like the Star Wars sequels for me. It's like, well, they used those actors and now they killed off the characters and actors have died in real life, so that's the only time we're gonna get to use them, basically. I feel the same way about this movie. Like so many of these actors died. And it's like, this is some of their last film credits, you know, so they really spoiled for some of them. Very, very long careers, like 6 year careers in Hollywood. So yeah, 3 out of 10 for me as well here brings your score to a 1, which is a whole point higher than Queen Kong Miles and me to a 3 and our podcast final to a 2 out of 10. I don't know if that's too high. It's definitely definitely one of our lowest and rightly so. It's right up there with Zarkor the Invader, which to be honest, I don't know if I'd rather watch this or Zarkor, but they're both very, very bad. I think I probably gave them similar scores. That's going to do it for this episode. Whew, boy, I do feel like I've gone mad trying to like revisit and remember. I watched this movie last week and my brain hasn't really corrected itself since. If you want to reach out to us, we're at kaijuversushistory.com on social medias at kaijuversushistory and check out our letterbox, Kaiju Versus History on Letterbox, to see all of our reviews in 5-star format. This one would get One star out of five. Miles, what are we doing next week? What are we going to talk about? What great film is going to wash the naked monster out of our palate?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Patrick, but not this week. I will thank the listeners for sticking with us. And we're going to catch you next time when we return to the suck that is direct-to-video animated Kong films, a genre that is surprisingly larger than it has any right to be. That's right. Tune in next time for History versus Kong, King of Atlantis.